This meeting of the House Resources Committee will now come to order. It is now 1:02 p.m., Friday, March 6, 2026, in Capitol Room 124. Members present are Representative Colomb, Representative Hall, Representative Mears, Representative Prox, Representative Sadler, and myself, Co-Chair Representative Freer. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take this time to silence your cell phones for the duration of this meeting. I'd like to thank Cheryl Cole from Records, and Renzo Moises from the Juneau LIO for staffing the committee today. In resources today, we will consider the governor's appointments of Commissioner Designee John Crowther of the Department of Natural Resources and Commissioner Designee Randy Bates of the Department of Environmental Conservation. We'll take public testimony on both nominees at the end of the meeting. First, we'll consider the appointment of John Crowther to be the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. Commissioner Designee Crowther, welcome to House Resources Committee. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. Well, please join us at the table. State your name and affiliation and begin your statement.
Thank you very much, Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Crowther, serving as Commissioner Designee of the Department of Natural Resources. I have something that's a little unusual for me in the committee. I actually have written remarks that I intend to read just to make sure I'm clear and concise out of respect for the committee's time. And of course, look forward to your questions and the discussion. So thank you very much for considering my nomination. It's an honor and a privilege to serve as Commissioner Designee pending my confirmation. I'd first like to share my thanks to Governor Dunleavy for entrusting me with this responsibility. I intend to share this short prefatory statement, five concepts that I want to emphasize at the department, and five priorities I have for us in 2026. I grew up in Anchorage, Alaska. I've lived there almost all my life, aside from going outside for both college and law school, and time I spent working both for the state and federal governments in Washington, D.C. I've been able to work directly for our last eight DNR commissioners. And I have learned a great deal from all of them. I'm thankful for their time at the department and mentoring me, and I hope to put those examples and lessons to good use. Over my career to date, I've been fortunate to have what I would describe as several dream jobs, but this current opportunity is chief among them. I do view this undertaking as a very serious obligation, both to our state and our people. I intend to pursue it earnestly. With some attempt at humility and some attempt at humor along the way, but I do have five principles that I want to bring to the department to share with you today. First, that I and our team are always able and willing to learn and adapt, to avoid overconfidence, to be creative, to accept new ideas, be willing to change, and adopt new processes and tools. Second, in the midst of change, keep our eye on our mission. To develop, conserve, and maximize the use of our resources in the public interest. Why do we do that? So Alaskans can thrive. We must keep our focus and our vision for the future in that and all we do. Third, we respect ourselves. I want the employees of DNR to support and encourage each other, acknowledge the demands on ourselves and our capabilities, cultivate professionalism, and ultimately hold our heads high. These first three principles all roll into the fourth. Respect the public who we serve. We adapt, we stay focused on our goal, and we hold ourselves to a high standard so we can make the hard decisions, the decisions that affect Alaskans, and at times have no perfect answer. When it's needed most, we're responsive, forthright, comprehensive, and Alaskans know that we're going the extra mile to understand and anticipate their needs. Finally, we have opportunities seen and unseen, known and unknown all around us. Our task at DNR is fundamentally to work hard, to stoke optimism, to seize the day, and unlock those opportunities for the public. And we should take joy in that work. So with those five key themes in mind, I have five priorities to share that I see being important for the department in 2026. First is to advance the governor's initiatives and execute his vision for growth. This means supporting our gas line, boosting the dynamic use of our lands for things like commercial opportunities, for new housing, for access, for development partnerships, and for long-term planning for our assets like our timber and agricultural land. He wants us to be energized and to act when opportunities are at hand, and we will. Second, we need to seize the federal opportunities that are available today. The partial revocation of Public Land Order 5150 is a marquee example of this, and there are many other generational opportunities to be unlocked with hard work and partnership with a willing federal government. Third, to seize the development window we're in today. The North Slope Renaissance, maintaining Cook Inlet energy production, and the booming mineral commodity markets are all DNR's core business, and I intend to double down on all of them. Fourth, firmly establish a reputation for responsiveness, engagement, and decisiveness with the public, where DNR is clear and confident about our mission, our processes, and our results. Finally, I want to strengthen our culture, promote from within, train new leaders, bring in talent, cultivate our people, so that a year from now, the department's energized, motivated, and has a record of accomplishment that we can all be proud of. So in closing, thank you to my family and friends for their support, and to all of the employees at the department who make me eminently confident that all I've just described is not only achievable, but likely thanks to their capability, and that we're set up for a great year. Thanks again to the governor for his designation in this position, and to all of you for your consideration. I look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Commissioner Designee. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Hall.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Commissioner Designee Crowther, thank you for being here. Pleasure to hear your remarks. Thank you very much. They were very strong. I'm curious how you view the relationship between Alaska and the federal government in regards to our natural resources.
Thank you for the question, Representative Hall, through the chair. It's something that has been the whole history and of our state to date has been tied together, right? Our federal landowner, our federal government is one of the largest landowners in the state, obviously, and their large land holdings across the country are concentrated in Alaska. And so that footprint defines community access, it defines resource development, it defines, you know, where we can build, travel, recreate, hunt, and the opportunities and challenges of managing those lands. You know, managing land is never easy in and of itself. When you have partners with different authorities, different boundaries, there's an additional difficult layer there. And so that's why I think what I mentioned in my priority to seize the opportunities while they're available. You know, the Public Land Order 5150 has the potential to change some land ownership. It also has the potential to decide some lands being in federal hands permanently. Clarity there for the public about where those land ownership patterns ultimately wind up. And so I think the thing we do at the state is we execute our processes. We're clear. We push for action on the federal side. We take advantage of the opportunities when we have a willing partner, and we're clear about why we need what we need when there's disagreement or misalignment. So I'm optimistic it'll be a very good year for our state-federal relationship, and we'll try and make progress on some of the longstanding and not always partisan or ideological challenges that have occurred.
Thank you. I've got Representative Sadler, then Representative Clone.
Well,
you're
good. Always. Sure.
I saw you grab your mic.
Oh, yeah, I'll take it. Sure. Thank you, the Chair, Commissioner Designee Crowther. You've given a good presentation on what your priorities were, so you knocked that question out. Let me ask you two questions, two sides of the same coin. What excites you about the opportunity to serve permanently in this job, and what scares you about the job? There's a lot of responsibilities.
Thank you, Representative Sadler, through the Chair. Part of it depends on what kind of day I'm having and whether I've had lunch yet or not. You know, the excitement, as I mentioned, there's many things that I know well, and there's things that I think will be surprises and new in this role. You know, for excitement, we have a structural oil production increase really for the first time since field startup. We have generational opportunities for this new land entitlement with the federal revocation. We have mining markets that, you know, are we've already seen our mineral claims spiking this year. So those broader contexts, it's just a very exciting time to be at the department. But personally, one of the things I'm most excited about is the chance to work with the leadership team. You know, many of the people who are now in division directors, section leads, project leads at the department I've worked with for in some cases years now, and seen them as well as myself advance into different roles in the department. And so I know their capabilities. I have tremendous confidence in them, and I'm just really excited to be able to work closely with those folks, because I know they're very, very capable, and I know we're in good hands at the department leadership level. The things that are, you know, daunting, certainly, and at times perhaps scary, is that these decisions are immensely consequential for Alaskans. And as I referenced, you know, I've been at the department long enough to know that we're not one good idea or one clear thinker away from an easy answer. You know, some of these really don't have a perfect solution. You know, how do we allocate resources or land boundaries or make development decisions where there's have to be multiple uses, and that, you know, that's been a part of longstanding needs from multiple user groups. And you know, to me, those are, I think we can have confidence and we can be decisive there. That's why I stress that in my remarks. I don't want to approach that with fear or trepidation. But that's where personally I don't have the knowledge sometimes. And so I do, scary is not the right word, but daunting and a serious obligation to know when those serious things are coming up, rely on the people who do know a lot, and then work to make the best decision. It's something that I take very seriously. So.
Thank you. Representative Klum.
Thank you, Chair. Through the Chair, so Designee Crowther, thank you for being here. That was a great introduction. It gave me a good sense of what direction you want to take. So I had a question about the future. So which resource sectors do you believe represent the largest opportunity for Alaska's economy in the next decade?
Yeah. Thank you very much for the question, Representative Cullum. And through the chair, you know, I'm never able to give a short answer when a longer answer will do, so I apologize. I've worked at the department a long time and seen how some of our strategic plans and top five priorities have been the same year and year and year. And I don't want to dismiss that. Things like our mineral opportunities that have been a part of, you know, Alaska's history for decades, things like oil and gas, which has sustained our economy. The future, I believe, is very, very bright for those resources. And that's why when I say double down on, you know, it's taken a lot of years and a lot of work for things like the North Slope Renaissance to come together. It's taken a lot of years and a lot of work for things like our mining, our water permit, our coordinated multi-agency process to come together. So that's not automatic, and we need to invest in that so that we get those good results in those legacy areas. The things I'm really excited about that I need to learn more about is with technology, with data, with transportation and accessibility. Things like carbon, which we discussed in this committee, industrial land use, some of these opportunities there, remote recreation, all of those areas, I think, are in a world where there's more connectivity and more ability to get data and people around the planet. We're the most beautiful place in the world. We've got the most land. We've got incredible quality. You know, we're a growth stock in those kind of frontier areas. So. Every different division has a lot to be excited about.
Okay. I had another question, but I can wait if somebody else wants.
Go ahead, Representative Klum.
Okay. Through the chair. So I really like that you mentioned a culture in your department. We always talk about vacancy rates and having trouble hiring. And in my experience, I've hired and fired a lot of people, and culture really makes a difference. Pay can make a difference, but if you're paid a lot and your culture's terrible and you're having a tough day every day, that, you know, a lot of people leave. So what specifically can you do to create a culture that people feel loyal to you, to the department, to their work? And what are some things that can kind of kill that motivation?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative, through the chair. So a couple of specific things. So one, I've referenced it previously, but I think it's emblematic of something a philosophy I want to bring, and that's our Future Leaders Summit has been evolving in the department for several years now. It's now peer-led, so peers kind of mentoring and educating their fellow coworkers about leadership, about opportunity. And, you know, to me, that's the engine getting up and running. And then you need to connect it to the machine and let it drive. And so what I mean there is that we don't want to just encourage our folks to come up with new ideas or to mentor each other and then say, keep doing that, and we're going to run the department the way we see fit. We need to listen and be responsive. And so, you know, the two things I want to do there are acknowledge and respect the huge amount of work people are already doing. All the, you know, it's hard to run the department today. People have enormous obligations on their plate. I want to respect that before we have initiatives or changes at the department level. And then two, when there's opportunities for those initiatives, I want them to be either led or shaped by the people who know the topic, know the work, and have been being encouraged to come up with ideas for how to improve it. So I think that's a very important part of culture, is people feeling ownership and feeling like when they have ideas or concerns that they're listened to. And I think one of the things that can be a big challenge for a government agency, for inherently a bureaucracy, is when people feel disconnected from the mission. Mm-hmm. You know, our mission is fundamentally an optimistic, constructive, future-oriented, wonderful mission, but our work is sometimes very mundane or complicated or localized or parochial. You know, how do I navigate 500 public comments and people want the road over here, they want it over there, they don't want the permit to be issued, they're mad the permit wasn't issued yesterday, and I'm supposed to do all this and I'm not getting support from my management, I'm not, you know, my ideas for process improvement aren't being listened to, you know, what's the point? That's the greatest risk, I think, to the department, is people lose track of what's the point. And then it becomes easy to be dismissive, to be flippant, to be delayed. When you realize the point is make a good decision for a good outcome, engage everyone along the way, and that what you're doing is to make things better, that's the cure to that.
Sure. I want to follow up? How would you describe your leadership style?
Developing. thank you for the question, Representative. I through the chair, I want to try and be a very involved leader and a leader who defers to the experts, who works to understand the processes and challenges that the team's working through, and is also confident to step in and say, let's be oriented towards the vision, let's be oriented towards the right process, and let's that involves the team is a very good way to lead a complex organization. So as I said I've worked for the last eight DNR commissioners. I've seen a lot of different leadership styles in practice, and you know, there's a lot of different skills that come from that, and there's a lot of different personal qualities that make one skill not applicable for someone and when it's perfect for another. So the technique of adapting is also very important to me.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Representative Mears, then Representative Souther.
Thank you, through the chair, Commissioner Designee Crowther. I found it amusing that you opened up with prepared remarks here to talk about yourself when you have been in front of this committee many, many times in your role as deputy commissioner on resource development issues. And I see that is part of the evolution that you're talking about, that you're stepping into new things. So I'm grateful that my colleagues touched on the resource development issues, which is huge here and to our state. But there's another half of the department that you're going to have to get to know a little bit better. I'm curious what kind of things that have been coming up in the last couple of months that you're seeing on the other side of the department that you haven't been dealing with.
Yeah. Thank you for the question, Representative. And it's a very good one. And the short answer is a great deal of things. You know, I've worked off and on at the department since 2012. And so, you know, many of the issues that are, you know, associated with agricultural development, our state park system, our forestry, I've been aware of at some level. But in the decision-making chain is an entirely different obligation and need for knowledge and information. So what I've been trying to do there is let processes continue to play out, let the people who know the subject matter keep doing the work they're doing, come up to speed along with them. You know, I would say one of the things I'm on a forward-looking basis that I need and I'm intending to try and learn as much about is our fire management. I know an enormous amount of resources are devoted to that, but I also think there's opportunities for technological deployment, for coordination and logistics management that, you know, not that I have those ideas and I'm going to come in and say this is how we do it right away, but that I want to encourage our folks, if you've been thinking, let's make this improvement, let's consider that, let's use this remote, you know, data technology, how can the commissioner's office be helping to support that team to be forward-looking in those efforts and not just every year we have an increasingly worse, you know, amount of acreage burned or properties at risk, have to respond and then catch our breath and hope for better next time. So in the forward-looking space, you know, fire management is a big one where I need to learn and I need the support of the team. You know, one of the biggest areas that's come up in the last several months is our, you know, just these issues about land use around the state. Our Division of Mining, Land, and Water is our largest division. They're doing things like land sales, water permits all across the state, hyper-localized but hyper-important to those localities. And so I've signed an area plan that I read all the way through. I've signed some land sale disposals that I've read all the way through. And I'm working to learn as much as I can about the specifics of those divisions.
Follow up. Thank you, through the chair, to Deputy Commissioner Crowther. I think one of the other things that is very different interaction is on the very public level on the parks. Mm-hmm. So people's interaction with the department is no more personal than our interaction with the parks. You and I are both from Anchorage. I imagine that you're familiar with Chugach State Park, as am I. And, you know, most folks, that's what they know about DNR is mm-hmm. on the parks. Is there anything, I guess mostly, you know, let us know how we can help you with those issues as well. And if there's anything in that division that you want to highlight.
Yeah, thank you, Representative, for the question. I through the chair, your point you made there is so apt for all of our divisions, but obviously parks, in a sense, first and foremost, is that many Alaskans have one or two interaction points with the state government or certainly the department. And how the environment we create, how they're perceived, how that's supported is critical. And you know, for our state park system, it's a very challenging time right now with resources both on our capital side and our employees and resourcing at the staff level. And so, you know, in the things that I've been trying to get my hands around the last several months, that's certainly one of the key areas is what can we do with the resources we have as efficiently as possible to help our parks be accessible to Alaskans, which we've seen an enormous increase in in-state use, which I think is a testament to the hard work of our parks division. Also, it's been very important for the governor to keep our fees flat so that, you know, fees increases aren't boxing out Alaskans at the expense of, you know, growing international or national tourism. But that's an area where I have a lot to learn too, and it's something that I acknowledge. We're in a tough place with resourcing and staffing, so we need to do as much as we can to stretch our resources and to be efficient with them.
Thank you, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Minister. I do have a lot of questions. I won't try and get them all done at once, of course, but a real kind of arcane one through the chair, Commissioner Designee Crowther, which we have to say. There's a proposal to not fund a second deputy commissioner job, your old job, your vacant position, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on whether that will hurt or help your ability to perform the job as you've outlined here this morning or this afternoon.
Yeah, thank you, Representative, and I'll try and be concise in my answer so you have more time for questions. I apologize for my long-windedness. In short summary, that position, which I occupied, I think, for 3 years or technically still am occupying, is very important for the department. Just to acknowledge it, It oversees our Division of Oil and Gas, which is a highly complex, commercially complex, technically complex division, which is, you know, the decisions that division makes. Do you grant a unit for a particular term? Do you include a bond? Is POD compliance on track or not? What are the right commercial terms for lease sales or for union negotiations? Those are very complex matters, and you need highly qualified people in those roles. So I think it's, you know, at the department level, we view that position as essential. And, you know, obviously it's been both in the governor's budget, to say the least, but at the department for decades. And so we view it as a critical part of the team and a necessity.
Follow-up? If I may, are there any, through the chair, are there any particular areas of state law that you've worked with that you think are interfering with your mission statement and your goals? You know, a lot of laws are passed on a piecemeal basis over different administrations, different legislatures, and they're not all consistent or not all effective as they were initially intended. Anything, area of state law or particular law, that you think is problematic?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, you know, I hesitate to identify an exact particular chapter of law. I do think there are, you know, I've observed in my time at the state, there's many areas of our statute where there's authority and language there, but the practice and process has evolved where, from the public perspective, it's not immediately clear how it, you know, how it may operate, the specific steps, the particular details. In some cases, that's done through regulation, but in some cases, it hasn't been done as clearly as it could. And I think the governor's AO360 is targeted at that efficiency and bringing clarity to those programs. But the department can also do a better job of, when I talked about being confident and being decisive, you know, that's part of what I mean is when we articulate, interpret, apply our statutes and regulations, we explain why we do so clearly so the public can understand. And so I think, not to speak to the legislature's authority or you know, about what statutes are and aren't clear, but, you know, we need to do as good a job as we can with what we've got to be clear.
Follow up. And I say that because exactly, there's a lot of good intent that goes into language, but how it actually works out in the ground is not always advanced the original intent. And because I do support the department, do support your mission, I want to make sure that the legislature gives you tools that are helping you, not standing in the way of your accomplishing your missions. Third follow up, ma'am, or if I can pass.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, ma'am. Through the chair, another big issue, there are certain winds in this building that blow towards changing our state's oil and gas tax policy. With your experience in government in that particular area, I wonder if you have any thoughts on whether that would be good or bad for the state. I'm not asking you to comment on particular legislation, but your general thoughts on the state's oil tax policy.
Thank you, Representative. I would, in quick answer to that, I would say that there's a very, very dynamic world out there, and the state has had relative stability now for a significant period of time, and we are seeing a very positive result to that. You know, we're seeing a structural production increase on the order of multiple double-digit percentages, potentially as high as 50% in the production increase in the near term. And I think that that is evidence of a successful policy and program, and that consideration of any future approaches need to take into consideration our observed success very carefully and closely.
Well played. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I've got next in the queue, Representative Prox.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, to continue on AO360, how is the department doing? What can we look forward to seeing?
Yeah, thank you, Representative Prox, through the chair. Thanks in large part to Deputy Commissioner Brent Goodrum. The department, I believe, is on track with the timelines laid out in AO360. We've been working to solicit public input, to analyze that input, and to develop some baseline targets for our regulatory changes. So I believe the department is on track there. You know, one of the things that's coming up in this process in a good way is there's regulations we have that are just outdated, or the program has been repealed, or they've been, you know, essentially replaced and repealed themselves but are still on the books. So there's just clarity benefits there. But there's lots of areas where on the order of a clarifying regulation or adjustments to regulation promote clarity or reduce the burden on the public. And, you know, to me, those outcome-driven areas, you know, we want to make sure we execute the overall process, but there's areas that have come out about high-grading particular regulatory changes that we think will have a positive benefit. So I think we're on track and we're doing well.
Thank you. Follow up. Are you familiar with the Executive Budget Act?
Representative, through the chair, that may be an area for additional learning and growth for me.
We will discuss that more. I think that's a real opportunity to accomplish a lot of the process for accomplishing a lot of goals and improvements, and happy to talk about that some more. One last one.
Is it another question or is it a
follow-up? Question. The division or the department, DNR, manages mental health trust lands. Do you have any thoughts on how that's going and should there be any changes in that area?
Thank you, Representative Prox, through the chair. The department does have a unique relationship, and the Mental Health Trust Lands Office is within the department. They're responsible for developing their lands and resources for the benefit of the beneficiaries of the trust, Alaskans that are utilizing mental health programs. I do believe many of the remarks, or all the remarks I presented earlier, applied to the Trust Land Office. We need to be decisive. We need to be clear. We need to be oriented towards action. And I think that team has been, you know, they've been very successful in their mission. They've raised a great amount of revenue. And I think, you know, recommitting to all those areas is something that I'll be working with them on this next year. And I know the leadership team there now has been of that same mind and working that direction with me.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hall.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. What was the hardest decision you've had to make in your career? How did you come to that decision? And looking back, would you have done anything differently?
Representative Hall, through the chair, that's a very interesting question. I think I would answer it this way. It wasn't so much a binary decision that I was responsible for that, you know, I did A and I wish I had done B. When I worked in Washington, D.C. on the Senate Energy Committee staff, it was a very challenging job for me because I didn't fully appreciate the complexity, the necessary stakeholder engagement, and the timelines involved. And so some of the legislative initiatives I worked on, I don't feel that I advanced as constructively as I could have, and that was because I didn't kind of take a step back and say, how do these timelines work? What larger process am I a part of? You know, many times in the executive branch, you're trying to complete a decision. Let's review this. Let's issue it. Let's get it out. But especially at the leadership level of commissioner, many of these are community engagement processes or multi-step processes or multi-department processes. And so I learned a lot from that experience that you need to not only understand your timeline and your plan to get something done, but who's coming before you and who's coming after you. And you can succeed and get your thing done all you need if you don't have it done when the next person in line needs it, or you haven't shared why you need it from the person getting it to you, you may not have a good outcome no matter how hard you work on it. So understanding how to be part of a multi-agency process or part of a team was something I tried to learn from that.
Thank you.
I've got Representative Coulombe, then I put myself in the queue, then Representative Sandler.
Thank you, Chair, through the chair. So lots of discussion about permitting, especially on the federal level. What do you have plans for state permitting process to make it faster, to make it more efficient, make it easier for people to deal with their permitting?
Yes, Representative Coulombe, through the chair. You know, we do one of the key business activities of the department is permitting, mm-hmm. and many of our permitting processes are in a very good place right now. We track closely our timelines, our processes, our resource allocations, and you know, across many of our different kinds of permits and divisions, we're doing quite well. A couple of the areas I see for better lean forward opportunities for the department is coordinating with the federal government. We have a federal government that is trying to streamline NEPA, that's trying to address some of the kind of multi-agency inconsistencies, and that actually creates an opportunity. In the state system, we at times kind of waited for a conclusion to a federal process before we started to act. If we're going to have more efficiency and clarity in the federal process, we need to integrate there as well. And so that's an area where I think we do need to be devoting our attention. And then also just transparency and data availability. We are working on things like making our information more accessible, not being hard files, you know, hard to access dashboards, or excuse me, hard to access file systems. How do we have more public facing dashboards? So we're working on that, trying to apply technology to that, and that's a growth area as well.
Follow up. Is there a certain industry or a certain kind of permit that you feel like needs a lot of improvement within DNR, or are they all improving the same rate?
Thank you, Representative. I think through the chair, I think many of our I think there's been a lot of improvements in different kinds of permits for different reasons, but I think we're in a good place across the spectrum. You know, one of the things that we in our office we're trying to do a better job of is our appeals program, and we did bring an appeals director. You know, we get appeals across the department, some very simple, some very complex, and we've managed to, I think, knock out about 50% of our appeal backlog in the last 6 months thanks to the work there. So I think that's frankly one area where we've needed improvement, and fortunately we're getting it thanks to that new position.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you. It's my turn. So I asked this question during the presentation last Friday to your division directors, and you mentioned earlier the governor's AO360. How is the department overall, not just the, you know, not just OPUMP or mining, land, and water, but how are you selecting regulations to propose for repeal?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. In short summary, you know, we do have a couple different, you know, we have a couple different batches. One are just regulations that are additional supplemental or duplicative. You know, we are focusing on areas where, you know, things like defined fees, defined appraisals, assessments that are set in regulation, more flexibility there allows us to meet the diverse needs that applicants are coming to us with. And so we kind of have a track of how do we meet the numerical targets fully to comply with the AO, and then how do we high grade things that are of public consequence? And so I'd be happy to follow up in more detail about what we submitted with your office.
Yes, please. Thank you. And I've got Representative Sadler.
Okay, thank you. Through the chair, there's a lot of issues that you're going to be dealing with. There is a philosophy that the state of Alaska has not been assertive enough in insisting on the duty to produce aspect of our leases of state land for oil and gas production, the so-called Spencer-Hosey argument, and there's some views in this building that the state should take back leases where the production is not to their liking. Have you any thoughts about this? I may be making reference to a particular settlement agreement, but just in general, what are your thoughts on the duty to produce doctrine?
Yeah, Representative Sadler, through the chair, I think it's a very interesting question and a very important question. And, you know, to me, the state has a very important role and power and obligation in our oil and gas leases, and we want to preserve that and utilize it to the greatest and most effective way possible. You know, there are implied and express obligations when leases take out leases. the department has a role in enforcing or has an obligation to enforce and engage with those. And I think the way I think about that is that any of those paths are not easy, not binary. We don't get to say, you didn't comply, give the lease back. We don't get to say, that's not enough, do this next year. However, we do have the ability to raise those arguments administratively, directly with the operator, and possibly in litigation to push and encourage, thank you, to push and encourage our leases for full performance and compliance. And I think that's where I talked earlier about the technical commercial complexity in the Division of Oil and Gas, especially taking the time to get in, understand development plans, understand industry norms, work the details and say, why isn't a well going in here? Why isn't this reservoir in the schedule? What's missing from this 3-year plan, 5-year plan? And that's something I think the last several years, especially in Cook Inlet, the department's done very constructively through our administrative processes, push developers on their plans. You know, we know and understand what's in the well schedule and have our own opinion and make it known. Should we do this next year? Should you hold off? And I think that's a very important part of what the department does, but I think we have to be realistic that challenges and attempts to enforce those judicially often take an extreme amount of time and at times don't go the state's way. So we need to push as much as we can, but be very strategic.
Follow-up?
Well, it's not a follow-up. It's a new line of questioning.
Representative Sadler.
I appreciate that. I mean, the confirmation process that you've watched it through the chair is interesting, and it's to some degree formulaic, but as part of that formula, there is often on the floor at the final confirmation and joint action where there is what I call a jacques moment, where a point is raised, an accusation is raised, an issue is given, and you, as the nominee or in the gallery probably, you cannot respond. So you're on the record now. I want to give you the opportunity. Have you any idea? This is what they always ask candidates. Is there anything in your skeleton, in your closet you want to let us know? Where do you think such an objection or j'accuse moment is likely to come? And I want to give you the opportunity to address it and defend against what it might be. This is all hypothetical, of course. But
thank you for the opportunity, Representative, through the chair. You know, I think I've worked at the department a long time. I've been involved in all sorts of administrative decisions. I've always done the best of my ability to approach them kind of fairly and in a balanced way and explain my reasoning. So I'm sure at some level there's people out there who don't like me or think I'm difficult, stubborn, annoying, maybe worse. But I'm not expecting or anticipating any explicit or specific critique. So I don't think I have much more to say there.
Yeah. Thank you. To Representative Sadler's point, I think we're the committee that probably works most closely with you as far as the, you know, legislators who, and I think, you know, just as the chair of resources, I appreciate working with you, and I think we've got a good working relationship, and your knowledge and your historical knowledge with the department, and so I don't anticipate any of those kinds of moments during the confirmation process. Yeah. Representative Klum.
So I have a couple of comments. No more questions. I think we've done questions. First of all, I have a firsthand experience with your persistence running the carbon bills, and I always respected that. 2 years, my first 2 years, lots of carbon. But you are always in the offices talking to legislators. You are always answering questions. And so I really respect that. I just bring up two things just when you do get in your role, and I feel like you're going to get confirmed. One is there is an issue with Chugach Park, and I hope that that is on your radar. I assume that you go to Flat Top and you have been in Chugach Park. It's the largest visited park in the state, and what is happening is we are subsidizing other parks in the state, and it's showing in our trailheads and our park management. So I just throw that up to you to see. I don't know if you need more revenue, move revenue towards the park, but because my district has access points, it's a big deal to my district. Also, I have been very critical of the Mental Health Trust Land Office. I hope that you develop a really good working relationship with them. There are some things that I think need to be changed and have more oversight. And I think with the new leadership at the Trust, there's a lot of hope, but I would just put that on your radar. That may be something that I would like to see you pay a little more close attention to. But I appreciate you taking all the questions and being willing to do the job.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions or comments from the committee, we will take a brief at ease before we continue appointment of Commissioner Designee Randy Bates to lead the Department of Environmental Conservation. Back on record in House Resources, Commissioner Designee Bates, welcome to the House Resources Committee. Please state your name and affiliation and for the record and begin your statement.
Good afternoon. For the record, Randy Bates, Commissioner Designee for the Department of Environmental Conservation. It is a real privilege and pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation to be in this committee. Appreciate the opportunity to have the dialogue. I also am thankful for Governor Dunleavy's trust in this appointment, and I'm appreciative of that. I'm happy to share with you briefly who I am, what I've done, what I believe I've done to earn this consideration from you, and why I would take this role on at this time with the department. So I'll give you a little background on myself, if that's permissible, Madam Chair. I'm blessed with a happy and, knock on wood, healthy family. My father is 85 years old, lives across the street from me. I check on him and see him every day. My mother is 79 years old and happy and has a good glow about her. I have three older sisters, and that probably in some way says something about my personality as the youngest and the only child, I mean only boy in the family. My wife is wonderful, and if any of you have met her at any of these events, she is a self-proclaimed executive chef on my commercial fishing boat, and in my work world, she is my emotional support. That's her title. She does work for the state of Alaska as well, so blessed to have her in my life. And between us, we've got three daughters, one of which is Dr. Bates, who lives here in town. Another one is in school in Hawaii studying to be a dentist doctor, and the youngest is a senior in high school this year. Supremely talented intellectually and artistically, and just I gave her enough credibility. She actually drew my tattoo. I trusted her enough to permanent ink on my arm. So she's really talented, and I'm just blessed to have a happy, healthy family. Juneau is home. It has been home for a very long time. We moved to Sitka in 1972, Juneau in 1973, and except for a couple stints here and there in other states, Juneau has been home. Graduated high school from Juneau Douglas. Started commercial fishing and went to school specifically to earn a degree in fisheries because that's what I knew, and I thought that would be the easiest thing in the world, and I'll be the youngest commissioner at Fish and Game at some point to manage the fisheries the way they should be managed. Got my degree in fisheries from Oregon State University. Came back up to the University of Fairbanks working through the Juneau Center for Fisheries and Ocean Science while I worked on a graduate degree in fisheries. And I continued to commercial fish not only through high school but through college in Bristol Bay. And I continue to be a fisher here in Southeast with a permit in the gillnet fishery as well as a hand troll fishery for Southeast here. I did begin – this is this is a fun story for me to reflect on. I started my career at the state of Alaska in 1994, April Fool's Day, 1994. And interestingly, it was a Range 6 front desk clerk. I don't believe that they have those positions at that range anymore. But I was answering telephones and delivering mail fresh out of graduate school because that's the only job. You know, you had to get in the state at that time to get your foot in the door and then be able to apply for other positions. So I took that job. I had a great time, spent a little bit of time, and that launched my career. So I've been with the state for 25 years. You may be doing math in your head saying, but wait a minute, that's longer than 25. I took a few years here and there. But I was hired in under Governor Knowles, continued to work through his administration, worked for Murkowski, worked in Governor Palin, Governor Parnell for a short bit under Governor Walker, and came back under Governor Dunleavy. So it's been a privilege to see that many administrations and work within them. I have worked in three resource agencies. I started in the governor's office, well, started in commerce, moved to the governor's office in coastal management, moved to DNR when that coastal management program was moved from the governor's office into DNR. I became the director of the Division of Coastal and Ocean Management in that tenure. When that program sunsetted in 2011, I moved to the Division of Habitat in Department of Fish and Game, and then transferred out, left state for a little bit, came back as the director of the Division of Water within Environmental Conservation, and when the privilege and the opportunity provided itself, a commissioner for DEC. So three resource agencies, over 25 years of experience within the state system, from front desk clerk to now commissioner designee, proud of the path and certainly what I've learned along the way. And what I've learned along the way, I introduced myself to the department staff May 19th when I took the position, and I introduced myself and laid out what I believe I've earned and learned over the number of years, and those are three philosophies or pillars by which my decision-making is guided. And the first is I am a strong advocate for resource development in the state of Alaska, and I just named the number of governors that I've worked under. And every governor has run and established a platform of economic prosperity and development through the state by the extraction of resources, whether it's fish, tourism, oil, gas, mining, whatever the case may be. Our economy is dictated by the extraction of resources in our state. So I'm a fierce and strong advocate of resource development. Number two, I am a strong advocate of states' rights. I believe that we are a state that does it as well as anybody in the nation, if not better. I have the experience in three departments to be able to make that, you know, confident assertion. And so I'm a fierce advocate of the state having the authority and doing it right. And number three is let's get fish back to our rivers. And while I don't control that, it certainly embodies what I believe in, that if fish get back to the rivers, generally, we have clean air, we have clean water, and we have clean land. And those three concepts, resource development, states' rights, and fish to the rivers, are not mutually exclusive. They should work together. And that's, I think, what is such an opportunity at DEC, is it brings those concepts together where we permit resource development and we manage the impacts to the human health and the environment. And those are, again, not exclusive concepts, but we have to find a way to marry those ideas. So talk quickly about why I took this position, and then I'll turn it back to you, Madam Chair. Nearly every industry in this state requires a permit from DEC, whether you're oil and gas, mining, publicly owned treatment facilities, a lodge, seafood processing. Almost every industry receives a permit, needs a permit, is influenced by what we do at the department. So it's critically important, in my perspective, that the department gets it right. We do. We get it right, and I'm happy to be in the position to continue that effort. I took the position knowing that this is a super great, super important department, and knowing that the tough work we do is ahead of us. Some of the tough work that we do is ahead of us. But I have never seen the alignment that we have at the state and the federal level like I see right now. The federal administration is willing to work with us in ways that we have never seen in all of my career. I happen to be in a position now working directly with EPA primarily at the federal level, And the relations are just simply stellar in terms of reasonableness, logic, collaborative. It is the epitome of what cooperative federalism should be in how they're treating us and how we're working together. So we have, in my opinion, we have a real opportunity as a state to make a big difference in the short term for the health of Alaska in the long term. And that's primarily, you know, just so excited to have an opportunity to take this position on, lead this department, and work on these tough issues. So all of that said, I'm happy to introduce myself. I look forward to the conversation, the questions. I ask for fair consideration. Look forward to working with you on the development of our resources. Look forward to working with you on the advocacy of our state's rights and managing our impacts and maintaining the cleanliness of our air, land, and water throughout the state. So thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to field questions, answer questions as you see fit.
Thank you, Commissioner Designee. It looks like Representative Sadler, was that your hand?
Yes, ma'am.
Representative Sadler?
Thank you, Commissioner. And now we get to say Commissioner Designee Bates, thanks for being here. You mentioned you took the wind out of my sails on one question regarding state and federal alignment, and I appreciate that. But things come, things go. There's an ebb and flow in federal policy. What do you think we need to lock in our relationship with the federal government where it comes to environmental protection in Alaska, and what is possible to lock in under the current configuration of the political winds?
Representative Sadler, through the chair. Thank you for the question. Yeah, this is a confluence of events that's pretty extraordinary. In fact, this last just 2 days ago, yesterday, Tuesday and Wednesday of this week, I was in Fairbanks with the governor, with the attorney general, and with the administrator of EPA, Lee Zeldin, and regional administrator Emma Pocon, who was the former commissioner, and there was a number of other folks involved. We were all in Fairbanks talking about and looking at a variety of different topics that affect us not only in the short term but the long term. And that includes PM 2.5, particulate matter 2.5 that was so impactful. The decisions that were coming out of both EPA and the state were impactful to North Pole and Fairbanks. So timely visit in the wintertime to North Pole and Fairbanks with the EPA administrator. Waters of the United States, which is a controversial topic for decades now. Contaminated sites around the state and particularly in some of the areas around Fairbanks. PFAS considerations, PFOA considerations, just a variety of different hazardous or contaminated issues. So communication is key. Communication is critical. We've got it as good as we've ever had it. It's just an opportunity for us to lock in some of these pieces with the federal agency right now. Contaminated sites is something we can make progress on with both EPA and our federal partners around the state, get some investment in those, the cleanup of those areas. Waters of the United States is another one that if we can, there's a rule out right now that EPA has released. We've commented with articulate issues, and depending on how that rule comes out in the next few months, we may have just resolve some long-standing issues on the jurisdiction of how far the federal permitting agencies can reach and what they can require. So,
Follow up. I appreciate good to hear that those issues are high in your mind, and I'm pleased that the federal administration sent their heavy hitters to Fairbanks. But again, administrations, there's a lot that can be done by administrative order and regulation. Is there anything that we can lock in while we have alignment now that cannot be reversed in a previous? In a subsequent administration. In other words, are there programs or ways we can deal with waters in the United States that set us on a path that cannot be reversed?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, does this come through okay?
Yeah, okay.
Again, fair question. Waters of the United States is one we believe we can have, Alaska can have, a fair outcome under this administration. And so we're working closely. Well, our comments were articulate. They were, you know, relatively strong. And we're hopeful that they'll be fairly considered, that they're at the top of the stack of 115,000 comments that EPA mm-hmm. got on that particular proposed rule. If we can get that rule, if EPA releases that rule in a manner that we believe is consistent and compliant with the Supreme Court ruling under the Sackett case, that locks us in for a long time. And what we believe is, in that particular circumstance with WOTUS, Waters of the United States, that's been an issue that's since five decades now, it's been litigated here or there. If we can get a rule that works for Alaska and for the lower 48 and Hawaii, we'll get out of that continual challenge of rule litigation and rulings and challenge. It's ripe for litigation. It's just been around. It's been challenged for so long. We finally had a ruling out of the Supreme Court that really could clarify some of these issues that have been so challenging. And if, in fact, EPA at this point can get that rule out within their timeframes, it may stick. And that's one of the pieces we're really looking forward to is getting some resolution on that one issue so it lasts. And all of these issues, they need to be durable. They need to last longer than I last longer than the EPA administrator lasts in those positions. We want these to be sticking rules that people can predict, understand, and for the industry, invest in Alaska because they know what the landscape looks like.
Thank you. Representative Cologne?
Through the chair to Designee Bates. Thank you for being here. So my question is, what do you think the department's doing really well right now, and what area of improvement that you're looking to really kind of turn the ship, and how are you going to do that?
Yeah. Representative Cologne, through the chair, thank you for that question. And there's a lot of things we do really good. It'd be hard to say one thing. I think that we have a talented staff. We have a world-class scientist on board. We have a 6.7% vacancy rate at any given time, snapshot in time. That's half of, I think, any other department. We've got experience in our directors and our commissioner's office staff that have come from within the agencies to know what the agency needs and then how it needs to run. We've got a morale that I think is as strong and as high as I can imagine or that I've ever been involved with. Each year we set up department goals, what we want to accomplish for the department. Most recently, we've worked on values from within, how we want to treat each other and how we want to treat our clients. So it's a two-way street, communication, transparency, respect, agree to disagree. All of those value pieces are critically important. So I think just we're good at an awful lot of things related to what our statutory and regulatory obligations are, but we are a committed group of individuals that have a civic responsibility and they take it seriously. And so if I can just elaborate a little bit more, one of the things that we do on a monthly basis is have an open staff meeting where we have 569 staff, and we have a staff teams meeting. So everybody can participate, and it's an open mic. We'll run through a few issues that are in the commissioner's office. We have many presentations, so somebody from each division will talk about one of their pet projects. This last week was a particular water quality constituent. And then we have a question and answers, and anybody on staff can ask me any questions. And so my goal is lead by example and be open, communicative, and transparent with what I'm doing, what we're doing, and how I lead the department. And questions can be as simple or as challenging as, are you going to allow teleworking? Or what are you doing on WOTUS? Why did you write those comments on WOTUS? And so it's what I'm trying to make sure is that the staff in the department have access and the opportunity to ask questions so they can understand what my thinking is so that I can help guide them in their own way of thinking. So it's a succession plan for me. What if I'm not here or when I'm not here, that way of thinking continues, and that whoever fills my position will be able to lead with the staff that is really geared towards that. So we're exceptionally motivated, and morale is high right now. Is there areas, the other part of your question was, is there areas where we could improve? There's always room for improvement in my world, in probably all of our department's world. I'll answer it in the positive, though. Under the Administrative Order 360, where we were charged with finding ways to improve the regulatory permitting process, we took that on as a department. We took that on as an opportunity to explore what we do, how we do it, and if there's a better way of doing business. And so Crystal Kieneman, who is the deputy commissioner with me, oversaw that with a number of our staff, and our division directors were part and parcel of that. We asked them to be aggressive, to work with staff, and find ways to improve what we do. And they responded. And so we've got a sequence of 40 packages, what we would consider packages of regulations, that we're going to pursue over the next couple years. And so that is a lot of room for improvement that we've identified internally. And that's not just internal. We also ask the public, what would you like for us to improve upon? What do you see as an impediment, or where can we be more transparent? Where can we engage you differently as the either regulated public, the viewing public, or the industry? So we're excited about that. We're probably a month away from rolling out our first set of packages. We've identified four phases of how we're going to approach this in terms of low-hanging fruit and high-priority packages. But there's room for improvement. We've identified that, and we've worked with the public to help solidify how we're going to approach that and what we're going to do. So we're excited about that as an opportunity to really demonstrate our commitment to improvement, and we have to find ways to be faster, easier, more transparent. So,
thank you. Thank you. Representative Hall.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Commissioner Designee, I'm curious, what do you consider to be the most pressing threats to Alaska's waters and air quality?
Thank you. Representative Hall, through the chair, thank you for the question. Thank you for the thought. The most pressing air and water quality issues. Just trying to find the right answer. It's just thinking about the issues that we have. I will address PFAS. PFAS is an emerging issue that we're certainly engaged in. It is one that is the landscape is changing, has changed, and we're not only engaged with it at the state and federal level, but at the local level too. So PFAS is a concern. PFAS being a constituent that has been identified as a cancer-causing agent, polyfluoroalkyl, and there's a whole sequence of different substances included in there. So we are working with our federal program drinking water systems to sample their public drinking water systems to find out, is there PFAS in the water? And so as defined and laid out by EPA, we're going to be sampling, monitoring those systems. Well, we're working with the system operators to monitor those systems. We're providing them some funding to be able to do that, and that'll occur for the next couple years. Just get a baseline. What's happening in our public drinking water systems in that regulated community? Then within that federal guideline, federal rule, we're going to be working on reporting of that material for the next little bit, next couple years. with an eye towards final compliance in that 2029-2031 timeframe. So PFAS is critically important to us. We're working with the federal agency on that drinking water component of PFAS and working with our local system operators to make sure that they have a they have the funding and they have the handle on what their waters look like so that they know how to address them if there are exceedances. That's water quality. Air quality, probably the biggest issue that we faced in the state as a community is the PM2.5, the particulate matter micrometer size 2.5 in the Fairbanks North Pole area. And we've got world-class scientists that have modeled that and worked with us. We have them on staff, but to figure out how to address that particular issue of that matter. And that's been a push by EPA to move us in a direction, and we've found a more common path now with EPA. Much of that air challenge in the Fairbanks North Pole area is not necessarily industry. It's a minor contribution, but it is wood smoke coming from people heating their homes. And that's it. It's understandable. I was up there and it was 28 below zero. It takes wood to heat your home if that's how you heat your home. Not everybody wants to transfer over to natural gas. Not everybody wants to transfer over to electricity. Wood is believably free if you go get it, if you don't consider the truck and the chainsaw and the gas and what it costs to get it. But we have to find a way to improve the air quality in Fairbanks, North Pole, and other areas without infringing upon the rights of the individuals and the freedoms that they have to be able to burn or heat how they want. So finding that balance between the industry and the environment is just constant and typical of what we work with. So in this case, in the Fairbanks area, North Pole, we've seen tremendous reductions through our past efforts. So we're Fairbanks is actually in attainment now, and we're very close in North Pole in a little more targeted effort, and grant funding in the North Pole area will hopefully also see some results that will be meaningful for the residents and the air quality. So.
Follow up, Madam Co-Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Designee Bates. Following back up with the PFAS comments that you made when it comes to monitoring for PFAS in Alaska public waters, what is the role DEC should have when it comes to mitigation, cleanup, or assistance, or like working with other agencies with cleanup? Like, what is the role to help make sure that we're limiting the risk of exposure to Alaskans when it comes to that harmful chemical?
Yeah, thank you, Representative Hall, through the chair. We have a fairly defined role, and if there is a party that caused the hazardous release, in this case PFAS, that oftentimes comes from aqueous firefighting foam, AFFF, we sometimes have a responsible party. And in that case, as it would be with oil or gas or other substances of a hazardous nature, that responsible party would be ultimately in care of the cleanup and the replacement of a water source for residents if they're impacted like that. We're working with the federal agency right now on the drinking water standard is 4 MCL, for MCL being the maximum contaminant level. So if there's testing that the drinking water systems do and they realize that they're over that 4 MCL level, we would work to identify potentially who that responsible party is and how we work with them to get that cleaned up. So and that's the way PFAS, like other constituents, we identify, to the extent we can, we work with the RP or we go out and do it ourselves to identify what that area of contamination looks like or the plume of it, if we can contain it and how we clean it up. And in some cases, it's soil, some cases, it's water. But
okay. Thank you.
Thank you, next in the queue. I know he's jumping to ask a question. Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. I have actually been involved one way or another with the Department of Environmental Conservation clear back to the Hickel administration. And been kind of a rough go, frankly. and I don't really know why. And things have improved considerably over time. And part of it is there was an attitude of kind of hiding behind federal regulations, that the feds did give a lot more latitude to the state than we took advantage of in, the hazard, I can't even remember what it was all about, but the timber industry in Southeast, I don't think the DEC did us as well as they could have. In looking for responsible parties has been a problem. The North Pole Refinery, the Flint Hills Refinery doesn't exist in large part, I think, because of lack of support from the DEC and just making this a science project. And the PM 2.5 was kind of an internal project rather than getting the... It could have been solved, I think, if the DEC reached out and made this a community project instead of a responsible party project or a state project or a federal project. The same on the PFAS. Mm-hmm. That is huge. I don't know if the government's printing press is even big enough to handle the cost of that. But I think there's a lot that we could do to reach out to the community, to the people that are involved in it, and do a lot more. And the same with the wood smoke.
Yeah.
And in particular, in the case of wood smoke, it is a community problem, and it would be a lot easier to solve. And I think with more communication, we can get people to buy into that. Yeah. As I say, I'm especially in the last few years, and I've had to be directly involved with it. There's a lot of good people that are working in that department, and they don't often get the credit that they deserve for that, which then brings up another. When you do regulatory changes or notices for public hearing and whatnot, more often than not, it is something that the department should get an attaboy for. But the communications that I get of a notice of regulatory change or something are so arcane and really concealed from the public that I can't forward it.
Right.
You're going to do something nice. I can't forward that to my constituents. It would just make them mad. It's, the personality of DEC, what is it they say? They can hand you a $50 bill in a way that it would really piss you off. And that's a problem. Yeah. And lawyers and all this and that that gets involved with that. But I would really be happy to work with you on trying to resolve that and get better communication going down to the individuals who are really affected by this. And I think we could move forward quite quickly with that. So I'm happy to, reach out, give me a call, see if we can figure that out.
Thank you. Madam Chair, is it okay if I respond?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Prox, through the chair. Great comments. Pretty hard to find a $50 or $100 bill on the ground and go, oh, I don't want that because there might be strings. Fair comments. On the regulation side of things, yes, I've heard that. I think I've heard that from you. If there's a way that we can ChatGPT, tell me what this means in plain English, and then put that out as an abstract. We will certainly work towards that, because I think getting lost in the markup mode of a reg can be daunting for a lot of the public. So we'll take that under advisement, certainly work towards the release of some of these regulations that has a more folksy feel to them, so that people understand if they're implicated or not. To your point about storytelling, I'll say this, and this is another mantra of mine that I use. We need to tell our story better. We need to tell our story better at DEC. We have a good story. It's a compelling story. It's an important story. And if we don't share it in a meaningful way, the public doesn't know. And guess what? If we don't say something, there's somebody else that's going to fill that gap about what we do or how we do it. And so I would rather, it's not always comfortable, but I would rather lean forward into some of that communication to help the public understand and at least engage in conversation rather than be quiet about it. Mm-hmm. Because I think the quiet breeds distrust.
Mm-hmm.
So comment noted. It's certainly something that we're working on internally at DEC. So thank you.
Great. Looking forward to it.
Yes.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. I am next in the queue, actually. So I appreciate your description of how you have been implementing AO360 and all of the thoughtful process that you've worked on. That's my first comment. And so I had the opportunity to meet with the EPA Administrator, Lee Zeldin, earlier last summer. And I sat next to him at dinner and took that opportunity to ask questions about some of the grants. You mentioned how strong our relationship is with the federal administration, and especially with Emma Pocon being in her position. And one of the things that I asked him about were some of the EPA grants that were canceled at the federal level, of course. And they indicated that while those grant programs, the programs were canceled, they would try to identify a way to move forward some of the pieces of those projects. And I'm just curious if you're aware if there have been any communications. I know that they're federal projects and federal programs, but right. Maybe you can share some of that.
Madam Chair, thanks for the question. We'll certainly... if you have specific grants, I think we maybe talked about this previously, but if there's specific issues you'd like me to look into, we will. I'll also say when the president's budget first came out in May, June, it was concerning, and it had stripped a lot of federal program project grant funding support that the states absolutely rely upon. That was changed, that budget changed. When it first came out, just like governor's budget, your proposals, those things change. There's a process they go through. So that was significantly modified, and a number of those programs, federal grant programs, were put back in maybe at moderate levels or less than levels. We have a number of really great grant programs that are supported by EPA, our HHOT, which is the home heating oil tank program, our brownfields program. There's a lot of community-oriented or resident-oriented grants that are available to us and to you that I think are just meaningful. And those we haven't seen a decrease in those. So Village Safe Water is another one, State Revolving Fund. We have a lot of opportunity for infrastructure and cleanup improvements in our community. So I do believe that your projects were specifically identified projects, and I'll look into those with you and find out what we can figure out if there's going to be a reinstatement of those funds or if there's another avenue of funding available. So
thank you. Next in the queue, I've got Representative Sadler, then Representative Mears.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to ask you, Commissioner Designee Bates, kind of a have you stopped beating your dog question, but do you favor industry over environment in your position, or environment over industry?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, I don't favor either. I implement the statutes, no more, no less than what I'm given. We do recognize that the industry needs permits from us, and it is our obligation and, in fact, our mission to balance the issuance of those permits with the protection and maintenance of human health and the environment. I will, super quick storytelling, if I can, just for another 30 seconds. Being at the Division of Habitat and having gotten a degree in fisheries, I'll tell you this. They did not teach me how to minimize impacts from projects when I was going through my fisheries program. They taught me how to maximize the production of fish, right? So, and I would say in general, universities train our future biologists to favor fish or the environment. When you get into a position like an environmental protection specialist or a manager or a resource specialist at DNR or a fishery biologist, habitat biologist, we're suddenly faced with the dilemma of permitting projects that authorize the damage or impact to habitat or resources. And it's fascinating because we're not trained that way. We suddenly have a job that we have to figure out how to do that in, where we issue an authorization. So it's an interesting dilemma, but one that we have a great track record of finding ways to get to yes while we maintain the environment. And so when a permit application comes in, a state employee, myself, for example, would have three options. I can approve it as proposed. I can deny it if I wanted to, because there's always ways under our regs to deny projects. Or 90% of the time, I am going to work with the applicant and the public and figure out how to modify that project to avoid impacts, minimize them where possible, and then mitigate them if necessary, so that we end up with a modified project that still gets a permit issued but protects the environment in the way that we're obligated to do so.
And I was, you've kind of answered my question. Sometimes I hear the accusation that the state permitters say yes to every permit. They never say no to a permit. I hear that accusation. I think you've addressed it, but if you want to take one more swing at it, I'd let that happen.
If that's a Gallagher a watermelon to smash, we do not simply say yes. 90, if not more, percent of the time, we modify projects. We do get to yes, but it's not through the acquiescence of just saying yes. It is through the opportunity to engage and modify projects to the point of getting to yes, so that we still satisfy the protection and we still see the industry operating. Representative, if I didn't say through the chair, my apologies.
Follow-up or new line question. I appreciate that you put that on the record, sir. I'll ask the same question that I asked of the other commissioner designee, Crowther. What excites you about the job you're about to enter or continue to do, and what intimidates you or scares you about it?
Thank you for the question, Representative Sadler, through the chair. The excitement is it's a culmination of what I've ever wanted or aspired to do. Never in a million years would I have thought I would be a commissioner. Good Lord, not me. I'm just Randy here in Juneau. What an opportunity. And more importantly, what an opportunity at this time with this alignment that we have and at the state of our state. So incredible opportunity, both for me personally and professionally. What an opportunity to lead a critical department with such an amazing staff and mission. It is a short period of time. I think when I came on, I had 14 months, 15, 16, 18 months, something. Short period of time. But I can, and I may be the shortest tenured commissioner there ever was, but by God, I'm going to make the biggest difference I can in a short period of time, given what I have to work with. So very, very excited about that opportunity to make that difference, both with this legislature, with this administration, with this federal agency the way it is and how they're willing to work with us. Is there anything that scares me? I'm not one that shies away from challenge, trouble, or fear. There's always room for improvement and public scrutiny and criticism. I've fielded it my entire career. You can't can't spend 14 years in coastal management and see it shut down without facing a little bit of criticism and frustration. There's nothing I fear, and really this is an opportunity. I look at our regulations and what we're going to do under the administrative order and say, we're exposing a lot. There's room for improvement, but that's okay. Some of the best educators are our own failures anyway. So if we just admitted there's room for improvement, we're on the record and we're committed to finding a way to improve that delivery. There's nothing fearful about that to me. It's a simple admission that there's room for improvement and we're committed to achieve that.
If I may,
is this a follow-up or is this a
it
new
is
line?
Actually, it is. It's a follow-up. Okay. It's not a new one. So, and to be fair, I think you've answered partially the question. I just want to give you the opportunity to anticipate what might be those Jacques moments during the confirmation on the joint session. You know, who might pop up with some charge you don't know about or it's from a long time ago. And is there anything you anticipate might happen? And what would your response be in this forum?
Representative Sadler, through the chair. I'm a pretty straight shooter. Certainly Commissioner Crowther and I have exposed some of our inner workings and said this is how we think, this is what we believe. I am not the same person I was 30 years ago when I started working for the state. My first position as director, I was not nearly as capable then as I am now. It's through some of the challenges and failures that I have experienced that bring me to this leadership role now at the department, where I feel I can be very successful. There's nothing that's going to show up in my record, my back, that I can't either address or attend to and still earn your confidence in this position.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Mears?
Thank you, through the chair, to Commissioner Designee Bates. Like Representative Prox, have a long relationship with the department, although a different perspective. and from that, would like to assure Representative Sadler, DEC is not a rubber stamp agency.
We'll take that.
By any means, and not every project does go all the way through the process. And you know, from that, I've got things that I do want to talk to you about more, but not for today. I want to take a little different turn on that. So this is my fourth year in the legislature and the fourth commissioner designee that we've had for the department. Having that much turnover is challenging for a department. And of course, that has nothing to do with where you're at now. But if you could speak to what the rest of the department looks like with longevity of division managers and you know, the rank and file staff, and if there's a strength in the agency going forward, and if there's ways that we can support. I know that institutional knowledge is huge. It makes a huge, huge difference when you're issuing permits. And I've had this conversation, like I did some mine tours last summer, and I'd always find the environmental permitting people. Right, and right. Like one of the things that makes their jobs easier, and I've felt this throughout my career too, is that when you've got people there for a long time with institutional knowledge, that is one of the best things that you can do to have streamline permitting, because people know what they're talking about. Yeah. So if you could talk a little bit about the longevity and strength in the institution. I know you have nothing to do with the fact that you're the fourth person here in front of us in 4 years, but what's the rest of the department look like?
Right. Yeah. Representative Mears, through the chair, thank you for that. And thank you for your service 4 years. And you're right. We've talked about, I was hoping you were going to take a different approach than Prox and praise the department for the good work we do and not say that we could do better. But, I touched on this a little bit, Representative. The morale, I'm surprised at how high, not surprised, but I'm appreciative of how high the morale is. When I came in May, I said to somebody, this is a great department. We're going to continue to make this great. And they were impressed upon me the importance of what I said. We're going to continue to make this a great department. I didn't come in saying, I'm going to change the morale. I'm going to change the focus. I came in knowing what we have is already exceptional, and I just needed to find a way to build enough trust from within to be able to lead and continue the good work that we're doing. And so I seem to have struck a chord, or at least folks tune into those staff meetings, right? I mean, 569 staff. I think at one of them we had 553. This last one, with some vacations and snow days that we might have had, we were sub 500. But that's a lot of people tuning in just to hear those conversations. So while I may be the fourth in a short period of time, I'm also in an exempt or partially exempt status, right? So I'm hired and fired at the will of the governor, or if I do something bad, I'm gone. We've got career-oriented individuals in our department, and that's super important. And that's that longevity that you talked about is critically important to industries, because they need in the permitting world, they need a permitter, for example, that knows the rules, that knows how to navigate the rules, and still provide the protections that we need. And so that experience, that longevity of being able to navigate, think, work with the industry, and come out with a product at the end is just critically important to both the protection of the environment, you as an applicant, and the public that expects us to be able to balance this. So we've seen some retirements recently in the last 6 months of some 40-year vets, some 30-year vets. We have some knowledge that is deserved retirement. Great, good for them. We also have to develop staff in a way that is, we have a succession plan. For me, for the program manager that oversees whatever it is, either mining or village safe water or drinking water, we have to have longevity, communication, transparency, relationships, so that we don't lose momentum, we don't lose that knowledge, we don't lose that ability to be able to navigate the programs and the rules. So we do talk about that regularly amongst the leadership. We talk about, you know, with the directors and the commissioner's office, we talk about how we're going to do that, how we're thinking about that, what do we do in this case. But that's if we could plug in USB cords to some of our departed staff, I would sure be appreciated. But short of that, we have to find a way to inspire young professionals to come into the department, stick with the department, and we have to inspire and mentor from the program manager level so that those young aspiring professionals have that sort of knowledge base as they build up, that mentoring process, so that they get what they're supposed to be doing. They're taught a way to think. So,
thank you. Representative Prox?
Yes, thank you. I'll sort of follow up on that line. There, I did find a number of people, longevity, I can't remember her name. Anyway, she worked past when she wanted to retire because she wanted to see the PM 2.5 problem solved before she quit.
Yeah,
I don't think that happened. I think she since did retire. But it was impressive. And there are a lot of people that are trying to figure out how can we make this work. There is a definite change in the DEC over the decades of, well, here's a problem we got to solve. But how can we work together to do that? And it's really refreshing. And I think there just needs to be some work on getting that out and getting the public to understand that, no, actually, we're on your side. We got a problem. We got to work together to fix it and make it work. Then the other, I don't know if you are aware of or have read the Executive Budget Act when it comes to the setting the budget. There's a lot of room for improvement there. But I think that's mostly a communication thing also, and I'd be more than happy to work on that because I think that really would help the communications with the department to get the public to have more confidence in what the departments are doing. So I got plenty of time to discuss that.
Look, Representative Prox through the chair, happy to continue that conversation. And storytelling is something – we have to engage ourselves with, because the rule of PM 2.5 that you're familiar with isn't about a rule. It's about the health and the long-term health of our residents. And the continued ingestion of that type of particulate matter is not good long-term. We missed that bus where we could have communicated that, and instead we're dealing with the fallout of don't take my wood away. Very different message. And
very
so
message.
We have to be able to get in front of some of these issues that might be controversial and communicate a proper story that it's for the right reasons why we're managing this. We want to work with you for these reasons. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Last in my queue, unless there are any other hands, I've got Representative Cologne.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair. So what water, wastewater issues in Anchorage does your department deal with? What are some of the top issues that maybe you guys are dealing with there?
Representative Cologne, through the chair, thank you. Let's see. There's a number of different issues. I think we've water, wastewater. We're working on a regulatory revision that would help a couple wastewater treatment facilities in Girdwood, for example, that's been challenged with some of their discharge. I think we're trying to find a rule that fits, that's logical, reasonable, and still legal. So that's one we're working with. The AWU wastewater utility is going to be facing a 301H waiver renewal coming up pretty soon, and that's an EPA issued permit that provides a waiver from secondary treatment, and that is that's one that's going to be of interest to a lot of folks. It's going to be driven by EPA, but required from DEC is what's called a 401 certification on that 301H waiver process. And what that would be is we would be looking at the water quality standards and making sure that the discharges from AWU meet water quality standards beyond what EPA would be regulating, which is just three constituents. So that's a particular issue that's going to we're already working on that, but that's going to start kicking in probably in another year or two. Management of the airport and what we're working with there, that's an important issue related to a variety of different issues. Anchorage, well, welcome to Juneau. You've seen Snowpocalypse Round 2. Mm-hmm. Anchorage on occasion has big snowfalls of 2, and so on occasion we deal with snow disposal there. I don't think that we had anything there like we had this year. We issued an emergency declaration where snow removal operators could discharge snow directly to the marine environment, just because we had such a challenge of managing that load of snow. It's hard to get up the hill here if it's one way and it's narrow and there's no parking. So getting rid of that snow is important, and when you run out of space, it becomes critical. So our department is willing to work with situations like that with all of our communities when they run into challenging situations and emergencies like that. So Representative, that's off the top of my head. I mean, there's nothing that stands out that's not business as normal. We have a lot working in the works with Anchorage and around Anchorage. But if there's something in particular I can address, I'd be happy to do so now or after.
Follow up. Yeah, so I was wondering about the waiver. I wasn't sure about the time frame on that. But I represent the hillside.
Mm-hmm.
And so there seems to be a lot of clamoring about this requirement to replace your septic tanks. Mm. If there's just a little bit, instead of improving it or fixing it, you have to rip it all out and put it back in. I'm not sure that's you or the municipality. I'm not sure who is requiring it in that. We're having a lot of watershed issues. We've got the hillside is all septic. There's no city wastewater up there. And so those septic tanks are aging. And I have older residents up there. It's, you know, pretty daunting to say you have to replace your septic. So I didn't know if you intersected with that or if that was clearly just a municipality decision.
Representative Cologne, through the chair. It, that Anchorage Municipality does have authority primacy over septic management. Okay. However, we're actively working on the very same issue statewide, and Mat-Su being the fastest growing area in the nation, we're working with the engineers there that have some concerns very similar to what you've raised here. So regulatorily, one of the first packages out the door, regulatory revisions that'll have a neat abstract that's demonstrable of how it affects the public, is going to be addressing septic systems. Whether that affects the hillside, whether you're within the municipality area where they have authority, or if it's a DEC, I don't know, but our regs are going to be probably effective to address some of that to the benefit of residents as well as engineers. So,
no, that, I think that's helpful. I mean, just so if it is our local government, if the state's going in one direction, that's helpful for us to kind of encourage them to align with the state. So thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Final for real, I think, Representative Paul.
Thank you for your indulgence, Madam Co-Chair. Commissioner Designee Bates, in response to Representative Colom's first question just now, having to do with matters that DEC is monitoring or managing or a part of when it comes to Anchorage, you mentioned the airport. The airport is in my district, and all three of my neighborhoods that I represent surround the airport. Can you please expand on what you said? Because you didn't provide any details. What are some of the issues, or like what is it that DEC is working with the airport on right now?
Representative Hall, through the chair, I'd be happy to follow up after this as well so that I don't misstate anything. I know that we've been working with the airport for a number of years on some of the areas that they have related to either the AFFF, the firefighting foam contamination, their areas where they're storage that, and I know that we've dealt with companies that want to come in and work at the airport and find, put a new platform in and airplane de-icing. You know, they need to de-ice, but they want to capture that in a way that it's not discharged. So it's obviously a throughput for economy there at the airport, and we're just in an ever-engaging conversation with the airport on how to manage their systems and what they need and how we can be supportive or how they need to be compliant. So
I look forward to continuing the conversation.
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. It appears that there are no further questions or comments. We're coming down toward the end of the committee. So seeing no further questions from the committee, we'll now consider the appointments of Commissioner Designee Randy Bates to lead the Department of Environmental Conservation. We will now move to public testimony on the governor's appointees of Commissioner Designee Randy Bates as well as Commissioner Designee John Crowther. To those who'd like to testify, when you're called up, please state your name, affiliation, which nominee you're speaking to. I'm now opening public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that would like to provide public testimony? Seeing none, and there's nobody online, I'm now going to close public testimony. Vice Chair Mears.
Co-Chair Freer, the Resources Committee held hearings on the following appointees: Commissioner Designee John Crowther, Department of Natural Resources, and Commissioner Designee Randy Bates, Department of Environmental Conservation. A signature on this report does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions.
Thank you, Vice Chair Mears. Hearing no objection, we will forward these names on to the joint session of the House and Senate. Please stick around to sign the committee report. That completes the agenda for House Resources Committee meeting today. Our next House Resources meeting is Monday, March 9 at 1 p.m., where we will take up public testimony on the governor's appointees to the Big Game Commercial Services Board and consider the appointment of Tom McKay to the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. The time now is 2:52 p.m., and this hearing of the House Resources Committee is now adjourned.